The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am thrilled to have back for the second time, only in my 11 years here, the guru of federal procurement, Dee Lee. Dee, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Mark, very much. It's good to see you again.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
So, and let's not make it that much longer next time. So, for the six people out there who may not know who you are, fill in a little bit of your background, please.
Well, I am a retired civil servant and very proud of it. I have also worked in industry. And in my government days, I worked at NASA and GSA and OFPP and the Department of Defense.
And at OFPP, you were the administrator of OFPP.
Yes, sir.
At Defense, you were the head of Defense.
I was the director of Defense Procurement.
Procurement, yeah. And basically the same thing at FEMA once upon a time. So there are some credentials to go, and a board member for NCMA for a while.
That's true.
So I remember. Was Mike there when you were there?
No.
Okay, before. Came after. Well, when you're done with 809, you can go back. But Dee's here today to discuss the Section 808 panel.
So 809.
809. Jeez, Mark. Well, I was trying to move it earlier. I don't know. So in 2016, NDAA established the Section 809 panel to do exactly what?
To figure out how we can buy things faster, better, more efficiently. Basically, what the tasking was to figure out how to get the Department of Defense to make sure we can take advantage of technological opportunities. Right now, there is a lot of comment that our system is so burdensome that we are missing opportunity and unable to deliver what is needed for the department.
Okay. That was, I assume, one of the reasons that DOD opened a shop out in Silicon Valley?
Well, there are many opportunities where people are trying to reach out and engage people who are not working with the Department of Defense. But if then the business process is so onerous or difficult that they can't enter, you've now found someone who can't enter the department. Or in some of our interviews, we've found people who choose not to because of their concern for the bureaucracy, the cost. In fact, I think one of the most striking things in meeting with a couple of companies is one company said, you know, a quick no is better than a torturous yes. And you guys are good at torture because we extend the whole process, the whole bureaucracy, the questions, the time, to the point where a small company really can't carry that burden.
Right. And, you know, American Express did it's done a number of studies through their open network. And the first one came out 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it said for a small business entering the government market, doing everything right, it was about a 21-month process before they won their first business. And unless you're a pure commodity play, that's very accurate. So, I mean, if you're doing transactional business, you could probably hit the street and make a few credit card sales in days, weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and think of us as individuals. I mean, you know, we're now so instantaneous that we're used to going online today. And by the time you and I get home from work today, if not tomorrow, we'll have whatever it is we wanted or purchased. In the Department of Defense, we say a couple years, we'll get back to you. The technology changes. You know, they cannot and do not want to sit around and then enter into a very bureaucratic business arrangement.
Well, I remember the desktop contracts from the early 90s, and by the time it was awarded, they were outdated because it was the 18-month refresh cycle. So you build this vehicle for the 295s or whatever the heck they were, and by the time they came out, they were, you know, at least one generation past that.
Well, the example I use today is, okay, if I start looking for the new car I want to purchase and it takes me 2 years to decide which model I want, I'm down there at either the lemon lot or the used car lot because what I'm missing out on the new vehicle is the new vehicle with the new safety features, with the more efficient process, with better, but yet because I couldn't get there, I'm stuck with this different product. And that's what we're doing in many cases to not only new entrants, but people who are used to doing with the business. It takes too long.
It does. It's a government market. Our speed is measured in glacial inches. And I warn people of that up front, both books, you know. Don't come here unless you got a lot of time, a lot of patience, and you're willing to learn a lot of things. So I'm certainly hopeful that you guys are successful. But let's get into a little of the groundwork here. The dynamic defense marketplace versus the classic industrial base.
Well, we're looking, you know, as you saw from our very beginning report, we basically have these four themes. And our themes are mission first. That's a little sensitive to some people because in some cases we've spent so much time and effort on do good things that may distract from the mission. So it's mission first. The second thing, and this is my personal hot button, is value time. Come on. We treat it like it's a costless, valueless commodity, and we are not very time conscious. So we need to value time. We need to just simplify the whole darn process so that other people can enter and exit and so that the taxpayer is better served by more efficiently accomplishing the mission. And the fourth one that is always interesting and may generate some more discussion is we need to decriminalize commerce. We need to quit assuming that a business transaction is a nefarious transaction and address the appropriate amount of risk with the appropriate amount of oversight.
Okay. In the supplement to the interim report, I think you capsulized it really well. The primary goal of acquisition regulations should be to promote the mission of the agency, not to impede it.
Yes, and look at the 2018 NDAA, Section 801 and Section 881, I believe.
Yeah. Before I move on, the Section 809 panel has a website, section809panel.org, and we're referencing an interim report and a supplement to the interim report, and there's other things there that we will get to, but the website is section809panel.org. And I strongly suggest you go download the interim report and the supplement and read them. They aren't very long. Combined, they're like 90 pages. And that includes all of the footnotes and all of that stuff. And there's, you know, graphics. So you're only going to read 60 pages. And you can do that.
That would be a good thing. We'd be happy.
People do read. How many pages is Safari these days? 2 million, 3 million, 18,000 pages or something. Ridiculous.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So.
But it's not just the FAR, as you and I know. It's all the agency supplements. It's all the policy letters. It's all the guidance letters. And one of the things that I find troubling to myself is, you know, everybody writes a pamphlet or an instruction. And these pamphlet or instructions are 50, 100 pages. Who's looking at all this material?
You know, how to do business with the Department of X, and you know, is it accurate? Is it not accurate? Public laws impacting the FAR, often contradicting the FAR. What do you follow? Presidential memoranda from, you know, dating back 15 years. I see these cited on websites, and they've been rescinded, but they're still on these websites, and you're going, what the heck?
I think that's the focus on simplify.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, God bless you for doing this. But, would it be easier to simplify or just throw it the heck away and start over?
We've had a number of people make that recommendation.
I'm shocked.
And Mark, I think that the important thing to set here is for people, so many people say to us, okay, another panel. What's different about your panel?
Look at the makeup of the panel. That's what's different.
Well, but there's another thing that's really important, and I would like to drive home. There have been lots of other great reports before us, and we're looking at them, and there are good ideas in there. But the difference, and if you go back to, I would say, the 800 panel did this. Many of the others in between, including the Sarah panel, which I was on, did not. And that is go that hard last foot inch to say, okay, if I want to make this change, what has to be done to accomplish the change? And you, thank you, referenced our interim report. We use those very small examples as an illustration of the kind of work we are doing. And one of them in there, it talks about the dollar coin.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of people, you know, called me and said, are you kidding? The dollar coin, that's the best you can do? I said, look very carefully at what we're trying to demonstrate, which is something that people say, oh, just get rid of that. Oh, no. You have to go all the way into the regulation. Where is it? And then you have to say, is it statutorily based? And if it is statutorily based, how do I get an amendment to the statute to make the change that I need? You cannot, in our democratic society, you cannot just wave your arms and say, I don't want to do that anymore. So the detail, and it, you know, the old expression, the devil's in the detail,
yep.
The difference in our report is that when we have a recommendation, we are trying to put in place an executable recommendation that doesn't guarantee it will be executed. But it does give the Congress or the agency the very clear instruction or direction on how they could go to make that change. And I think our interim report, the success of that is, and we thank the Congress, is very clearly demonstrated in the 18 NDAA, where they picked up those, albeit they small, recommendations,
mm-hmm.
but they were ready for implementation. They were not a recommendation that says, gee, somebody should go look at the dollar coin. Nothing happens.
There you go. You're listening to AmTower Off Center. We're going to take our first break, and we shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Dee Lee. Dee, you're the chairperson of this panel. Is that
I
accurate?
Am.
You are.
Yes.
And a wiser choice could not be made. Again, it's section 809panel.org. There's a submission tool and a subscription tool at the website. So you can fill out a form and subscribe and get their updates, which include their podcasts. You can follow them on social media when you go to the site. But there's this 50 worst acquisition regulation laws and policies that acquisition professionals really find egregious. So, and that's on the website too. So go to section809panel.org/50worst, particularly if you're in 1109. And
well, 1102.
1102, sorry.
1105, 1106.
I'm messing up my numbers today bad.
Well, Mark, thank you for that. Let me talk a little bit about the 50 worst. And that is, you know, as a panel, we have received many, you know, we've received input. And most people think about the big things. And often people think about major defense weapon systems, which is part of our industrial base discussion, which we can certainly get to. But we also know that there are great people out there every day working, and there is something that is making their job more challenging than it needs to be. It could be a pesky little reg. It could be a review process. And then they say, if you could help me with this, I could spend my time on more valuable, it would make my job more interesting. Or my personal favorite, if I could actually get the contract awarded, I could spend some time making sure we get the product or service delivered. You know, as a community, think about how much time we're always talking about contract, contract, contract. How about performance, performance, performance? And so if we can free people's time up so they could get to contract award more quickly and then actually make sure we get the product or service. So our 50 worst is, come on, folks out there, this is a challenge, and this is your opportunity. We know there is something out there that is causing you a challenge. Give us very specific, you know, we're not looking for give me more training. That's not executable. But where's your challenge? And help us find it and describe why you need it resolved. Let me give you an example. In our interim report and now in the 2018 NDAA, there was fuel storage. And that's a very niche group, very competent, high-skilled group that deal with fuel storage, a huge issue for the Department of Defense.
And there's a lot of fuel, yeah.
And there's a lot of fuel. Years ago, and this is one of the things people might know about, is something in there that's a little aged. It was right at the time, it was well-meaning, it had a constituency, but time has passed. And that fuel is a perfect example. At the time, in statute, there's a requirement that says every 20 years you have to update. It made environmental sense. The technology has advanced where 20 years is no longer the life of these fuel tanks. But yet, think of the cost to the taxpayer of saying, well, every 20, things got 10 more years on it, but let's dig it up and replace it. Doesn't make sense. But they couldn't just say, oh, we're not going to do that, because they had a statutory requirement. So that's our point, is you can't just write the report that says, hey, do something about fuel tanks. We actually had to do that hard last inch that says, where is it in the regulation? Where is it in the statute? And how would we change it to make this important impact that may seem minor to some, but taxpayers, it's a savings and efficiency for you.
Okay, so it's in the 2018. Are they going to sanction the 809 panel to keep going? Because I have to believe there's more than just a couple of these things out there. So.
That's our 50 Worst campaign.
Right.
Our challenge to the community out there, government and industry, is what is it? The more specific, the better. Like I said, you know, just saying, hey, streamline the FAR is really not helpful. Give us your specific things. We like to call it the underbrush. You know, you're on the path and you need to get there. But if you have to fight your way through, you know, every time you do snipping brush and thorn and clearing the way, it's stopping you. So give us your underbrush. Give us those little things that can be changed. Now, people say, oh, there's a little thing. Yeah, dozens or hundreds of them make a difference.
Okay. Move on to industrial base.
Industrial base. Okay. For years and years and years, particularly you and I, we can go back and we can
a few weeks.
We can remember that, you know, people would say, okay, this is the defense industrial base. Back to our interim report, we spent a lot of time saying the world has changed. The Department of Defense is no longer the biggest buyer. They are no longer the requirements definition community. They no longer say, I want it this way, and the industry says, well, let me build it that way. They're, in fact, in many cases, DOD is big dollars, I admit that,
yep,
but very much a minority participant in some of the items that products and services that we buy every day. So we're now calling it the dynamic defense marketplace, where DOD needs to be able to transact in the marketplaces, in the various markets, including new and emerging companies, to go out and get the technology that they need to support our mission, defense of this nation. And if they have to weed their way through the underbrush and spend years getting there, we're not getting the latest and greatest participation. So we're going to have a defense. We're suggesting the defense marketplace, where in fact we recognize there are different markets and DOD has different impact and influence in those markets. And we think there needs to be a more effective way to transact in those markets.
If there's not a more effective way to transact, what you said earlier applies. Some companies are just going to say, this is too onerous.
Well, that leads us kind of to one of the points you mentioned here was commercial buying. Yep. look at commercial buying. You know, oh, so new and exciting and fast and fair. We're going to buy commercial items. And we've now done the history and have it. You know, we started out with a half a dozen or so clauses. There's now over 100 provisions. Come on. When you go on fill in the blank some online website today to make a purchase that's going to be delivered to you tomorrow, do you say to them, gee, I'll need a copy of your affirmative action for Vietnam? And I'm all for affirmative action for Vietnam vets. My husband is one. But do you ask for that, or do you just make a buy?
TAA compliance, you know, on down the line.
So what we're looking at is a very much return to commercial, that when it is a commercial item or product or service, and we think there are more commercial services than have traditionally been considered, you should be able to buy it, to use kind of a slang, on different paper, a different transaction, not the government unique burdensome transaction. So we're looking at that as, if there's commercial items out of there, we got to be more like a commercial buyer.
Okay. So, but that's going to go back to the 1102 training issue. How do you bring your workforce up to speed?
Well, you got to change the rules by which they're required to operate. If they're required to put 100 clauses in there, they're going to do it.
Well,
so we need to go back and strip those out, and back to, if they're statutorily required, we have to do the line in, line out mark and say why that is good for both industry and government and the taxpayer to make these changes. Some of them are just darn old. You know, something got stuck in there in 1970, may have been the latest and greatest and hottest thing going. Is it still relevant today?
It may have been tied to an earmark. Stranger things have happened, right? So how is this going to impact going forward DOD business systems, anything over there that that needs updating, that needs replacing, everything?
Time. Access to great technology in a timely manner. And that's what we're trying to get to. And make the job such that it's, and I don't mean to this to be, we're not saying dumb it down, but we're saying simplify the process so that both government, industry can in fact transact smartly. And so that those new companies or emerging technologies that you mentioned that, you know, right now are saying, I can't go there. I can't spend the time. I can't wait forever. Will have more interest and bring their creativity and technology for Department of Defense to have access to it.
Okay. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Dee Lee. Dee is the chairperson for the Section 809 panel authorized by NDAA. Dee, in the interim report, the section for the research team for deals with barriers to entry. Can you talk about that a little bit, please?
Certainly, Mark. As you see, we've got, we call them 10 plus one teams, and we could certainly spend a lot of time on every team, but let's focus on team four, which is called barriers to entry. Team four has made numerous trips, endless stakeholder meetings saying, okay, come forth and tell us what are the barriers to participating successfully in government work. And we've heard from a lot of people, and one of those we certainly hear, it has to do with audit and compliance, and where there's some discussion of small business, service contracting, cost accounting standards. There's a lot of items in there that are of concern, and people cite them as barriers, as why they either don't enter the community or, in some cases, exit serving the government. So One of those is the audit and compliance area. We have a team of people saying, okay, you know, how many audits are necessary? And the question that they're asking, which is really interesting, is does everything have to be an audit? In some cases, there are reviews or assistance visits. And right now, everything's an audit. And one of the things we've discussed a lot of things, these are not final yet, but is being able to ask the community, whether it be DCAA or DCMA, to say, help me get to the right solution versus audit me and issue a report. That back to what many companies have, which is that what they call internal audit, which is really advice and assistance on hard issues before they become a big issue. So we're asking ourselves, what kind of internal assistance, maybe more reviews, maybe more analysis, rather than just everything's an audit? From an industry standpoint, when everything's an audit, they're full of auditors. And is that efficient? And what are you getting for that? So we are looking at audit and the repercussions of audit. Not that we want anybody to do anything wrong. Not that we want to spend too much money. But let's not spend so much money on the oversight that returns little value. So we're looking at that as a particular transaction.
Okay. You mentioned early in that answer the service contracting side of the universe.
Yes. You know, you look at, as a government, we now spend over half of our money on services.
Only half?
Over half. And so, you know, you and I go back a long time. There was a day when the government had government plumbers. We had government, you know, people.
Lawnmowers.
Exactly. Yep. We did.
Your own janitorial staff.
That's true. But things have changed. And I will say things have changed for the better. They've evolved. And we now have a blended workforce. We have in Department of Defense, we have active duty military, we have civilians, and we have contractors to do particular things. We have made the service contracting complex. We've got all these different categories. We've got all these different reviews. We call some things personal services. We call some things non-personal services. We discuss and in some cases argue over where they can sit, how they're being treated. So there is a lot there. We are looking at how do we go forward with a blended workforce, appropriately contract, and as I mentioned early, then manage and make sure we're getting the work that we expect to get. And we think in order to do that, we're going to have to make substantial changes in the FAR and probably in the statute to provide some additional authorities, some clear accountability on how services are acquired.
I can see your ability to change the FAR. I'm praying that you have the ability to influence some statutory changes.
Well, the Congress did pick up two of those, you know, like I said, albeit they minor, but they were illustrative of the kind of work that has to happen in order to make change.
Yeah. And I think when you get your ultimate 50 worst, you'll have a stronger case to take next hearing. So let me push that again. Go to section809panel.org/50worst. Can people see what's already up there on the 50 worst, or are you just adding?
We're just adding right now.
Okay.
But we're hoping that people like you will periodically say, okay, come tell me what you're finding. Come tell you what people are suggesting. We did a very soft start, very soft start to kind of launch. You know, it's always good to check and make sure your website works before you launch.
That's true.
But I have a recommendation from Kurt. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
And Kurt says, this is an example. Now, I'd like a little more specificity, Kurt, but he basically says, look, past performance, it's out there. But every time you turn around, it's a different reporting format, it's a different threshold, it's a different requirement, sometimes it applies. Decide what you want to do, make it simpler, clearer, easier for both government and industry to comply, and we all won't be chasing our tails on this. So we now have to take that and say, okay, is that in statute? Is that in regulation? Is it in policy? How would we affect a change? many of our other great predecessor reports would write a line item that says, you need to streamline the past performance system and turn it in and walk away. That's not executable. We have to go
deeper. Don't you love vague? My daughter teaches English. I've taught English. I teach the marketing part of the contracting classes at GW. And I have people that come with those nebulous things. And I'm going, you know, the Claire Peller, where's the beef? You know, come on, give me something
right
here.
And that's what we're looking for with this 50 words. This is a challenge. Come on, community. We hear all the time of, you know, this is bothering me, that's bothering. This is your opportunity for things that maybe your boss says, hey, that's a little thing, don't bother me with it, or we just can't get that one changed. This is the opportunity for the person out there working every day that knows something that needs to be changed, either because it's onerous, maybe it's old, maybe it's no longer relevant. But if it's in the statute, you still have to do it.
I think past performance is a good thing, but how it's executed has always been, you know, everywhere. And I don't get this question frequently, but I get it, you know, with some regularity. A contractor will call and say, I got a bad, you know, CPARS. How do I fix it? And I'm going, I'm not a lawyer, you know. Go slash their tires. What?
Well, and so, Kurt, if you're out there, some more specificity. Let's go.
There you go. So you know I write a lot about GWACs.
Yes.
So.
Doesn't everybody?
Yeah, maybe. But
they're big dollars. They're a huge number of transactions.
There a lot of well, it depends on, you know, SUP and CIOCS have a lot of transactions. I'm not quite sure that Alliant and Oasis are the same way. Larger transactions for the most part. You know, I don't know how you felt about this, but when I saw the first $1 billion task order, I'm going, what?
Well, and look at other things that are happening on these. We're issuing BOAs. We're issuing task orders with options.
So are you going to address this issue as well?
It certainly has come to light from many, many people, and it is one of what I would say the larger issues, probably questioning. And here's our basis where we start. What is the purpose of a GWAC, MAC, or IDIQ? It's very clear, it needs to be very clear, what are we trying to accomplish? And because I've been in this business a long time, when we first started, this is the good, the bad, or the ugly, one of the intents of many of these vehicles was to be able to speed up the transactions with trusted partners. So the goal was to run a competition in accordance with CICA, which, by the way, I'll say we're looking at CICA. Is competition in 1984 the same as it was in 2017? And you and I could spend a whole session on that.
Let's dig up Jack Brooks.
We could talk about that. But in this particular case, we're saying, okay, why did we start these vehicles? The intent, at least as far as I understand it, was to go out and have full competition to compete, to select a number of trusted partners, a small number of trusted partners, and then to be able to quickly order and place task orders against these vehicles so that you could provide good pricing and quick response. Okay, now what do we have? We have a plethora of vehicles, of which industry, you got to get on it, because if it becomes the hot vehicle of the day and you're not on, then you're out. And we take 2 years to issue task orders. And even worse, we take 2.5 years to issue the contract to start out with. So think about that. If it takes you 2 years to award the contract, where are those new emerging smart, great companies? Well, they're not on that vehicle because they couldn't, because they weren't eligible at the time. So now when they come and say, I got something to sell, you know what we do to them? We say, hey, go team up with so-and-so on vehicle X. Is that what we intended? And is that the best business transaction? Those are the kind of questions we're asking.
Okay.
What are the purpose And are we achieving that purpose?
It'll be interesting to see if you come up with a variation on the theme. So,
what do you think? What do you think we should do?
I'm the marketing guy. I'm not the contracts guy. I help people sell from GWAX, Max, any IDIQ out there, GSA, SUP, NITAC, doesn't matter, agency-specific vehicles, but I'm the marketing guy. I've never been in the contracts. The smallest part of selling to the government, my last government book, was the contracting chapter. And, you know, it might as well have been like 2 pages because that's about all I know.
Well, if you recall, when they first started out, a lot of people called them hunting licenses.
Oh, yeah.
I can now hunt.
Yeah.
Because I have a license.
GSA schedule, hunting license.
But that doesn't mean you're going to get work.
Right.
And we have some data. We're trying to be very fact-based data. We have some data that shows, you know, companies spend time and effort getting on these vehicles and never get any work. Now, some people can say, well, that's because they don't know how to market or they don't have the right product or service. But there is a cost of those companies to get on these vehicles. And I often hear people say, it doesn't matter. You know, the government doesn't pay for that. Oh, yes, the taxpayer does. Because it goes into that company's overhead, and then it comes out in the form of product or service. And so that means everybody, whether that be government or industry, is paying more because of an overhead cost that had to be incurred to be in business.
Well, this is almost a circular argument. A lot of the reasons that companies don't sell from the vehicles is they don't understand the FAR or the buying process in government. When an RFP or an RFQ comes out through a SUP or an ITAC or an Alliant, you know, their response may or may not be what the government is really looking for.
Right. And does it have to be that complicated?
Exactly. So that's why a lot of companies, frankly, expect the phone to ring if they get on any vehicle, particularly a GSA schedule, because that's the myth that's been perpetuated forever.
I'm sure you dissuade them of that belief.
I try. You know, none of the vehicles make the phone ring. There's always work before, during, and after.
But there is also cost and time involved.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So are we the best business partner? These vehicles supporting that approach?
No, that's why I hated LPTA. Amongst other things.
You know what I call LPTA? I'm not a big fan of LPTA. This dates me, but I call that sealed bid without transparency.
I like that. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Dee right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here today with Dee Lee. Dee is the chairperson of the Section 809 panel. Again, you can find them at section809809panel.org. Not only should you write that down and go there, industry and the 1102 community should be contributing to the 50 worst. But Dee, you've got 11 research teams there. Can you quickly run down the purview for each?
Mark, I'd be delighted. I'll go quickly through the teams. We have Team 1, which is basically our FAR experts. We are looking at that FAR. Now, some people say, oh, you mean the DFAR. No. The FAR impacts DOD acquisition as well. So obviously it includes the DFAR, but we're also addressing the FAR. And from that standpoint, that's where I would say we invite other agencies to participate, and we have a good number of volunteers. So we're hoping that, you know, the civilian agencies will be equally interested. On Team 2, we have a proposal that we're working at that is actually going to fold or matches into our dynamic defense marketplace, which basically says, hey, it's what I would call an OT for an other transaction for readily available equipment and products and services, a much more abbreviated and streamlined way to buy.
So an OTA kind of gig?
Kind of like that, which basically what it does is eliminate a lot of government unique terms and conditions, allows people to transact quicker, and so we have a proposal on that.
Well, kind of a cross between an OTA and a SAP.
Kind of, with bigger dollar value.
Yeah. Oh, well, hopefully.
Yes. Team 3 is one of the things where we have in slang, it's put the commercial back in commercial. As you and I talked, get those 100 claws of growth out of there and get back to where you really have what we would call a commercial transaction, which is rule of law. How do I get paid? How do we resolve any issues that we may have? And clear out all the do-good stuff that has over time attached itself in the name of commercial. The fourth team is many of the things you and I discussed today, which is what are these barriers? What is unique and different about government that industry finds off-putting or too big a hurdle or cannot enter, especially new market entrants? And we're asking those questions, and we've got a whole litany of things we're looking at. Team number five is really intriguing. This is for those people who think of defense as major weapon systems. And instead of all the good studies that have gone before us that say, well, what went wrong, and let's go, you know, put another belt and suspenders on that. We're saying what went right and how do you duplicate that rightness? Right now, we're seeing that it really matters. Your funding matters, your leadership matters. And so some of those things, they're looking at specific programs.
So the Spencer Johnson, Ken Blanchard, catch people doing something right mode.
There you go.
Cool.
Team six. It has to do with, would we be a panel without talking about information technology? They're looking at basically defense, we call it defense business systems, but it's really the defense enterprise information technology systems, and how can you better affect that? So they've got a lot going on that. Then we have Team 7, budget. No surprise to anybody, color of money, CRs, all those things do not make our buying efficient. So how do we address that? I'm going to skip Team 8 because I want to close on that one. But Team 9, oh, how many of us know about cost accounting standards? And we have some of the experts looking at how do we modernize cost accounting standards for in 2017. So looking at that. And then Team 10, we have some workforce activities. We have a workforce team there looking at things. And then we have what we call the plus one team. We have an expert, Bob Cover, who many people know. He was worked on the Hill and in DOD, is really a statutory expert. And he is going to consolidate and provide for the first time since 1947 a consolidated Title 10 that will show how our laws and regulations really read. We think that's an important baseline because it will help us going forward to keep this thing modern and efficient. So we've got that going. But let me wrap back to Team 8. Team 8 is what we call our underbrush team, and that's why I so appreciate you having me today to talk about our 50 worst. That is, we call it the underbrush, and the visual would be you're on the path. You want to get there. You want to get to the top of the hill, but you got to fight your way through the thorns and the thistle and everything that's grown over and clogged up the path to keep you from getting to where you need to go.
Kind of like getting to Cinderella's castle.
Get that underbrush cleared out, and that's what we're asking people to do. We're saying
Sleeping Beauty's castle.
Yeah, that one. We're saying, come on, industry, you know some of this. But government folks, you know, too. But specificity, give us what is really causing your issue and hopefully how you think it could be solved. And that's our ask for you. And that's where we'd like people to go and submit that. And we want to hear from everybody. And then hopefully we'll be able to come back and talk about some of the good things that they gave us ideas and recommendations on and move those forward. It's a challenge. Let's all go together.
Yeah, I definitely want you to come back when you've accumulated, first batch of 50 worst. That'll be cool. Give me some final thoughts. What do you want, aside from the participation on the 50 worst, what do you want from industry? What do you want from your contracting officer community here?
I want people to know that the 809 panel wants to hear from them and values their input and that we are looking for bold ideas. Now, the 50 worst is the underbrush, but we think cumulatively getting that stuff cleared out is, in fact, a bold movement forward. But we are also looking for other bold ideas. As I mentioned there, talking about a very new streamlined way to acquire services and products. We are looking for really stepping back and saying, okay, what bold changes do we need to do in budgeting and accounting? What bold things that people would normally say, oh, we can't do that, do we need to think about and figure out a solution? Let's bring ourselves into the 21st century and be a great department that can acquire technology, that can be a good business partner, and is on the cutting edge.
Always a pleasure, lady.
Thank you, Mark.
My guest has been Dee Lee, the chairperson of the Section 809 panel. Again, find them at section809panel.org. Look for that 50 worst. That's going to be /worst. And look for the sign-up sheet to get their daily media clips. And you can also look for Dee on LinkedIn.
Yes. Challenge is on. Let's go bold and let's clear out the underbrush.
There you go. This is not my day job. As I mentioned during this interview, I'm not a contracts guy. I'm a marketing guy. If you have vehicles from which you are not getting sufficient traction, give me a call. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.